Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 2nd, and this is episode number 370. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I'll tell you what, this week, this week didn't start out so well, didn't start out so hot with the paranormal news, but just kind of opposite of the weather. We were just talking about the weather prior to coming on the show, coming on live. And yeah, the weather is seemingly cooling off everywhere. It's kind of a strange thing. And somebody pulled the plug on summer and we're officially in fall. But the paranormal news was going from cold. Now it's heating up. So I don't know what's going on. I think it's going to be a very, very crazy fall here in the paranormal. So you might want to hold on. I want to get the seatbelt on. And enjoy this very crazy ride that's about ready to happen. I think this is going to be a very active fall for paranormal news. And we've got a chock full lineup tonight. I was almost late getting here on the show because I was reading a couple of late breaking stories. And these are two stories I just had to quickly get some information for so I can kind of talk about it and know what I'm talking about here. So the lineup tonight, we're going to be talking about Bigfoot in Whitehall, New York again. It's not the first time. It's not the second time this year, but the third time we're going to talk about Bigfoot appearing in Whitehall, New York just this year. Also talk about a new bird discovered and an update on an animal that has previously been discovered. So kind of a rediscovery of a discovery. I don't know what that means. That's just what I wrote down here. Canadian water monster kindly asks Nessie to step aside. You know how those Canadians are. They're very nice. They mean well. And a bonfire UFO scares 9 people. Well, a day later, it did. Fiery dragon over Argentina. And we'll get to that story that I skipped last week about the psychic scammers strike again. And another late-breaking story, which actually happened about almost 2 weeks ago now. I didn't even see this. I don't know how I missed this story. It didn't pop up on my feeds anywhere. But they're back. I guess it was just over a week ago. Not even quite 2 weeks ago, but they're back. The killer clowns have returned here in 2018. If you don't know what I'm talking about, well, wait till the end of the show and we'll talk about that. No matter what, I'm not skipping that story. Interesting lineup of stories tonight. And I'll tell you, I'm in the midst of my silly season right now. I got a lot of traveling to do in the next few weeks prior to Halloween. I just got back from a trip over the weekend. I was down at in Asheville, Ohio. It's Ohio is lovely. It's chock full of these small little towns. Each one has their own neat, nice little charm. I drove through Circleville, Ohio, which is Pumpkin USA, pretty much. There's pumpkins everywhere. There's probably pumpkins in June down there, if I would have to guess. Pumpkin water tower. It's beautiful. And speaking of water towers, I live pretty close to a very giant stack of pancakes. That's a water tower in Burton, Ohio. So Ohio is just chock full of really interesting things. But I was south of Circleville in a little town called Asheville on Sunday, September 30th. And they're the Pickaway County Public Library, a branch of the larger library, which I was at earlier this year, and I'll be there again next year. But I had a little stop here at this smaller branch over the weekend to talk about cryptids in the state of Ohio. It was a lot of fun. It was a small crowd, but you'll have that. Sometimes it happens, and sometimes those are the best crowds to have a small group, a small gathering of people, because then I can kind of take my presentation that I've put together, and I can kind of customize it with the people that are there and have more of a conversational piece, which is what happened, which I really enjoy that, because then I know they're getting their money's worth, which they would have got their money's worth had I not said anything anyway, because the event was free, as most libraries are. But again, it was a small crowd, but it was very fun. And big thanks. I want to thank Scott, who's in the chat room right now, who's a fan of the show, obviously, for bringing his cousin Gentry. And they came all the way from Cincinnati, which is a couple of hours away, about 2.5 hours south of where the event was. And I came from about 2.5 hours north of where the event was. So that was pretty cool to see and meet a fan of the Paranormal News Insider at an event, as always. So thanks, guys, for coming all the way up there to enjoy. Hopefully you had a good time and you learned a few things and you had a good time. Listen to me for about 2 hours. I think I cut it close to 4 o'clock down there. But I got more to go. I've got another event, not quite in the same area, somewhat close, down in Piqua, Ohio. That is also out pretty much in the middle of nowhere. It's a really interesting event that I'm going to be driving down on probably Friday night to go down. I don't speak till Saturday during the day, but it's quite an interesting event, and I don't want to miss too much of it. It's called the Uncon 12, and it's an unconventional convention, and their theme this year is Alien Freak Show, and I'm going to fit right in with that. I'm going to be talking about cryptids in Ohio, but also cryptozoology with kind of an alien focus. So it's going to be different than anything I've ever done before. And I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited to meet a whole new crop of people who are interested in maybe not so much paranormal stuff, but just they're fans of a lot of other things. And that's going to be really interesting to be around a different type of crowd instead of people that are just coming for a paranormal conference or a paranormal speech, to meet people that are just going to be hanging out for all sorts of different things. There will be a ghost group down there in attendance as well, which will be kind of neat. So that it might attract some paranormal fanatics as well as fanatics of comic books and movies and TV shows and all sorts, any genre you can think of, you're free to celebrate it down there at your will. It's unconventional. It's Uncon 12 in Piqua, Ohio. And if you want more information, it's un-con-ventional.com. And you can check it out. Check out the event. It's kind of really unique at the location as well. It's taking place like in a mall of all places. So it's going to be quite an interesting event. They've been doing it. Again, this is the 12th year. They don't really advertise it too much, but it packs the house. So I'm excited to be a part of that event. And the following weekend after that, I'll be presenting at the Albitwitch Day in Columbia, Pennsylvania, along with fellow speakers Tim Renner and friend Rick Fisher, who I was talking to earlier today. And I got to figure out my travel plans so I can figure out if I'm going to be able to hear him speak on Friday night at an event and hang out with him and have dinner. So hopefully I can get my schedule arranged for that. I know that's too much information for you, but you know, welcome to the show. Then I get a little bit of a break. I don't know how this happened. I originally had another event scheduled, but things fell through. So I'm kind of free all the way until the end of the month, where I'm going to be heading to Westerville Public Library, which is on the outskirts of Columbus on the northeast, kind of the northeast corner, I guess you could say, of the around the big city of Columbus down there in Franklin County, Ohio. Yeah, maybe I'll go fishing. I'd like to go kayaking next week if I have a day off. It'd be great before the everything freezes over, which feels like it's coming soon. I don't know why. But then after that, right now, I have nothing on the schedule. So It'd be time to relax. I got a lot of work, got some new things going to be debuting at new events next year, paranormal conferences, conventions, hopefully a couple of big surprises that I'm going to be putting out there. Probably not so much a book or anything. Hopefully I can get something going pretty soon. But looking forward to next year. A pretty interesting slate of stuff already stacked up. But yeah, you came here for the news. You came here for the news. And again, this is a really interesting night. There's a lot of cryptid news, but I got something here for everybody. Fans of cryptozoology, fans of ufology, fans of ghosts, and well, some clowns to go along with all that. So I didn't talk about it. I've been talking about it for a while, and you're not going to hear the end of it, especially after October 30th. But yes, I can't wait for the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure 2019 edition, hanging out there with Eric Altman, hanging out with Bill Brock, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Cliff Berankman, the Ames guys, the Mountain Monsters guys. It's going to be, yeah, the experience of a lifetime, but I always say it's going to be intense. It will be intense, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be in a tent. Might be staying somewhere else. I did stay in the tent the last 2 years, and I have no problem with that. I enjoy sleeping in the tent. It's awful cold and awful rainy and awful wet. But I'll tell you what, this event is probably going to be the best East Coast, maybe not even cryptid-based. I'm going to go out there and say the best paranormal-based event that you're going to hear about all year long next year. Not just from me, but from a lot of other people who will be in attendance. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a fun thing, and you can find out more about that event at PABigfootCampingAdventure.com. And there'll be all kinds of people there, mostly cryptozoology people, but for myself, I have a background in ghosts, background in UFOs, and there'll be some UFO guys there. Stan Gordon, who is pretty much the aficionado and the man, the go-to person for Bigfoot and UFOs. He was the MUFON state director for quite a while, and has dealt with UFOs and Bigfoot in that state for almost 50 years. So 5 decades worth of research. He's going to be there, and a whole list of other people. It is intense. Just the amount of people that are going to be there. It's going to be really exciting. But speaking of cryptozoology and speaking of Bigfoot, the Village of Whitehall, New York. It's no stranger to Bigfoot, especially this year, like I mentioned. In August, a motorist claimed to have seen a Bigfoot crossing the road. It makes me wonder, was he chasing a chicken? I don't know. Anyway, but back in July of this year, Whitehall was in the news for announcing that it was officially making Sasquatch the village's official animal. And they got a lot of press about that. And then again, not shortly after that, there was a sighting of a Bigfoot down there. But Bigfoot sightings began to pile up in Whitehall back in the 1970s from several sightings near a golf course. And the 1970s was a huge time for Bigfoot sightings. And this year, they had an event, which I think they do this pretty much every year down there, for Sasquatch to celebrate these sightings. Well, this year they had a Sasquatch calling festival, and I would have loved to have seen this. I would have loved to have maybe even participated in this. This would have been fun. This event was held, which crowned an adult and child winner, which were both awarded cash prizes. The event sounded like a great time and included a friend and fellow researcher, the Squatch detective, Steve Coles, who appeared like he was the master of ceremonies for the Bigfoot calling contest right there. I saw him in the video and started laughing. I imagine he had a lot of fun doing that. And if you think it sounded like a good time, it had vendors, music, movies, food with barbecue, raffles, and a lot of researchers on hand. Well, you haven't heard anything until you actually listen to these Bigfoot calls. And you can do so as there's a video up on YouTube that will make you want to open the windows and crank up the volume. And I've got the link right here from the New York website that I'll throw in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you get kind of privileged information. Pretty much anything that I have, that a link or a photograph. So I have some photographs coming up for a UFO story to share, so you guys can see this stuff before it. Before I do put it on the social media outlets, which I'll do that. I'll put everything through the socials, as they say. I don't know. Do they say that? I'm not young and hip anymore. I don't know what they say, what these kids say, these young whippersnappers talking about their cell phones and their social medias. But I do have Facebook with Paranews Insider and Twitter at Paranews Insider that are kind of bundled together. And I'll put that news out through Facebook, and then it hits Twitter. So it doesn't matter which one you follow. I know a lot of people have their favorite or another. And yeah, I got to get on Instagram with the website. That's something people have been asking me for a while. But we'll do that eventually. Let's see. Ghost guests at the Bigfoot event. I'm assuming you're asking me for the PA Bigfoot camping adventure. Sure there will be. I know Lon Strickler will be there. Consider him a ghost researcher. I mean, he's like me, he's an anomalous researcher. Let's see. We're off the top of my head. I mean, it's mostly a cryptozoology thing, but again, like myself, I'll be there. I'm a ghost researcher. Guest speakers are pretty much... Yeah, I mean, Rick Fisher will be there. Rick Fisher is a paranormal investigator. Ron Murphy, I would consider him a ghost researcher. In addition, he's a historian and a folklorist. He knows a lot about everything. But everybody else, well, Rosemary Ellen Guiley will also be there. So she's very well versed, especially anything happening in Pennsylvania with ghosts. She has a very deep background in ghost research. So she'll be there. Let's see, who else? There's actually going to be a couple of paranormal groups. Oh, yeah, I forgot about Jimmy and Diane Trick from Goosebumps Paranormal. How could I forget about them? They'll be there. The Ohio Night Stalkers will be there. And let's see. That's all I can think of off the top of my head that I know that are definitive ghost researchers. There'll be all sorts of just basically generalists like myself that are into a lot of stuff, like Lon Strickler and Butch Witkowski will also be there. So guys that are very well versed in a lot of different things, in addition to a lot of great cryptozoologists. Like I said, Eric Altman, who's putting on the event, Colin Schneider, one of the youngest cryptozoologists out there, will be there. And in addition to all these big special guests that are going to be there. So it's going to be a great time. Yeah, Mothman, the Mothman Festival is the second weekend of September generally, and not to take anything away from them. It's always a great event down there as well, but this PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, I'm telling you what, it's going to be bigger than intense. It's going to be awesome, but do check out this video on this website. I'll put that link out on Facebook probably tomorrow. It's my lead-off story tonight, so you'll hear about that tomorrow. You got to listen to these people. And I've had the experience and the fun of participating in a lot of these Bigfoot, I don't know what you call them, besides these PA Bigfoot camping adventures, where we do take people out into the woods and do give them kind of a preview of what we do as researchers. Guys like Steve Coles will take people out to some of the heavily more hard to get to places near Chestnut Ridge and actually take you out with some of the night vision equipment and IR technology, and we'll go pretty deep out there in the woods. I was able to go out last year, whereas the year before I opted to, I want to stay back and stay at the campground and hang out with the kids and hang out with the people who are a little bit too afraid to go out there, and they just want to kind of stay a little close by and they're a little nervous out there in the woods, which is fine. So I have no problem with that, and you know, teaching them some of the little things that we look for and the little things that we do and things about animals and stuff. It was a lot of fun, but it was fun to get out with the big boys and get out there in the woods last year and really get out there. I don't know what I'll be doing next year, but I'll tell you, it's a lot of fun to get out there. But besides that, I've been out with a couple of different cryptozoology organizations and gotten out and listened to some calls. And these calls that you'll hear on this news story are pretty entertaining. But I'll tell you, the ones that I've heard in person were just like, they made the hair stand up on your neck and your arms and everything. It was quite interesting, quite exciting. So if you ever get the chance to go hang out with a cryptid investigator out in the woods, I know it sounds a little weird, a little awkward, I get it, but do it. It's fun. So this I got this second story here in cryptozoology. It's kind of a repeat. It's kind of surprised to see this come back out again, even though I've already talked about it. I already covered it. I don't know why it's circulating again. It initially appeared back on August 19th, which I then covered in the August 21st edition of the Paranormal News Insider. A botanist discovered a rare tree kangaroo that was thought to be extinct and had not been seen since 1928. Even then, the initial specimen was the only one ever documented. A single female was shot and killed with its pelt sent to the National History Museum in London. You know, that's what we did. We shoot things and we stuff them and we categorize them and put them in a drawer. That's what we do. That's hopefully what we did. Now hopefully we just shoot things with cameras and video equipment. So it was the Wandi Woi tree kangaroo that was rediscovered during Michael Smith's late July visit to West Papua, Indonesia, where he heard stories of this tree kangaroo last year while searching for rhododendrons. He's a botanist, so he's looking for flowers, kind of a naturalist. So he's not really a specialist in anything, but he was out looking for rhododendrons. There's too many D's in that. Well, this year, while in the remote area of the Wandi Woi Mountains, at about 5,000 feet in elevation, he and his guides he was going through the woods with discovered claw marks in the trees, along with kangaroo droppings. I don't know how you identify a kangaroo dropping versus a dropping of any other animal. If you don't know what I mean by droppings, well, I can't help you with that. It's, right, it's that stuff. So Smith was lucky to be able to get a few photographs of the animal as it sat in its roost about 90 feet above them in the thick forest. Smith also plans to have the droppings tested and have that DNA compared to the only pelt to be 100% sure this is the exact same animal. He seems to have his next adventure lined up, as he told his local newspaper that he's now thinking of searching for a ringtail possum that is only known by a single collected specimen that was collected back in 1884. That's a great cryptozoologist right there, looking for these animals that have only been seen once. It's not even his job. It's not even his thing. So that there, you know, I talked about cryptozoology over the weekend, and I'll be talking about it all month long at a couple more events that I'm going to be hanging out at. And this is a prime example of a cryptozoologist, somebody who's looking for animals that some scientists would say, well, it's too much of a risk to spend money to go out there and look for it. And it's probably not there anyway. It's probably extinct. I mean, 1928, only one specimen found. I'm not going to waste my time or my money to go out there. And, you know, my money that I'm given to these by these academies and universities and whatnot to go out there and search for these animals. I'd rather find something else, something easy, document some bees or something. I don't know. But for me, I'd be that same kind of person. Let's go find something that the scientists have given up on. Try to rediscover something. It seems like it's not 100%. Like there's still, there was a scientist who actually, he wrote the book on tree kangaroos, all the different distinct species of tree kangaroos. And he even said that he's pretty definite that this is that creature, but still no announcement from other organizations that you'd kind of expect would have taken this information. But once he gets those droppings, the doo-doo, and once he gets that analyzed, if that DNA is Compared to that pellet, I think that's a slam dunk case for the Wandi Y Tree Kangaroo. And if you're really interested in that guy, I'll put that in the chat room as well. Got to do a little surgery on it just to make sure it goes in there right. And you can have at it. Check this guy out. He's pretty cool looking. There he is. So it's kind of weird to see a story come out 1 month and then hit. Sometimes it happens. So we go from the Indonesian mountains to Loch Ness in Scotland. What do you say? The Loch Ness Monster back in the news again. And this isn't the only news, but I'm skipping over another story that's been kind of floating around. No pun intended. Well, pun intended. I'll say that. Floating around. It's pretty good. Came up with that on the fly. So when you hear the phrase lake monster, you might think Loch Ness Monster. And while Nessie is the most popular of the water-based cryptids out there, there's actually a lesser-known lake monster that might actually be coming out of semi-retirement. So we went to Scotland, but now we're going to pack our bags, and we're going to head to British Columbia, Canada. On September 12th of this year, David Hallbauer and his brother Keith and their families were enjoying a picnic along a nice lake in British Columbia, Canada, when they saw something come out of the water that they described as a dinosaur. David Hallbauer told Global News, quote, "When you're sitting by the beach on a sunny day, you don't expect to see a dinosaur come out of the water. I saw this black form come out of the water, cylindrical, and then roll," unquote. There were no dinosaurs that lived in water, but I'm not gonna mince words here. I'm not going to. Let's just get on with the story. So this lake in question is the landlocked fjord lake created by glaciers. It's about 84 miles long and just over 3 miles at its widest, with a surface area of over 136 square miles. So this lake, if you can imagine, if you've ever seen Loch Ness, you've seen maps of Loch Ness, this particular lake is kind of in that same shape. It's a long, thin piece of water that's actually very deep. So it's very similar to Loch Ness, which is kind of interesting here. But this is actually, again, British Columbia. So this is none other than Lake Okanagan, or Okanagan Lake, which is purportedly home to the water monster called, no, not the Okanagan Monster, but the Ogopogo. So Ogopogo, you haven't heard that name very much in recent years, but he's making a comeback, or maybe she's making a comeback, I don't know, coming out of semi-retirement. Ogopogo has been seen only a handful of times since the 1940s, but the first documented sighting occurred back in, wait for it, 1972. Back at the disco, at the end of the disco era there, or I guess, or beginning of the disco era. I don't know. I wasn't around. Well, I wasn't even born yet. Pretty close. And since has included a few videos and photographs, yet it's still the most popular lake monster in Canada. And in case you didn't know, yeah, there's a whole bunch of lake monsters in Canada. But Ogopogo is still more popular than Igopogo from Ontario, Memfri from Quebec, and Manipogo from Manitoba. Granted, it's claimed the legend of Ogopogo goes back to the 1700s, under a different name, of course, used by natives. But there's no real witnesses of these creatures. David and Keith's sighting was on September 12th and was also described as a giant snake in the water, about 15 meters long. For my Canadian friends, well, that's about 16 yards, or, well, how about just over 49 feet for my American friends. Many of the previous sightings have been explained away or more than likely have a logical explanation, but this sighting was the second sighting of September, and another one was logged less than a week later. No pun intended with logged. On September 9th, a witness saw a large object moving through the water and captured a photograph of what looks to be a wave, although it was said no boats were in the area at the time. The third sighting of the month came on September 18th, where a witness was working on the 22nd floor of a high-rise building looking out over the lake. The witness claimed to see a large snake-like creature about 30 to 50 feet long breach out of the water. And this is what the sighting says. It says the witness claimed to see large snake-like creature about 30 to 50 feet long breach out of the water for 2 to 3 minutes. That's what the report says. But I have a feeling that it's 2 to 3 seconds. That's an awful long time for a creature to be out of the water unless it's got wings. It's flying around like a flying snake, maybe like a dragon. But I'm pretty sure it was just 2 to 3 seconds. Since the witness also claims that while this was happening, they were trying to get their cell phone out of their pocket to get a photograph or a video, but by the time the phone was ready, the object had submerged and the water was then suddenly calm. Well, so much for everyone carrying technology that will solve the world's mysteries like everyone seems to think. Well, everyone carries a smartphone. How come nobody can get a photograph of this thing? Because these things happen so quickly, you don't have time to react because you're too busy being in the moment. And of course, the Ogopogo has its own website dedicated to selling t-shirts and making claims that it's probably an extinct beaked whale that somehow survived 35 plus million years in the lake. 35 million years in the lake. Well, there's a problem with that. Because the fact is, it would have been covered by glaciers a few times, including as recently as about 20,000 years ago, would have been covered in at least a mile-thick chunk of ice. I don't think a beaked whale could survive that, just saying. And this helped give birth to the shape of this lake, again, long and thin. And also its final depth, which I don't have the number there, but it's pretty deep. It's pretty deep. And it's British Columbia is on the Pacific side of Canada on the left coast. Well, the west coast, I guess. But the lake itself is, Okanagan is pretty far inland. It has no outlet to the ocean. There's a lot of rivers and streams that feed into that Okanagan, but it does not lead to the ocean itself. It's pretty much it's landlocked. It's not going anywhere. So check out OgopogoQuest.com for new pictures and an in-depth analysis into what the Ogopogo could possibly be. And the owner of this website of OgopogoQuest.com is also a witness to the creature on a couple of occasions. Gotta love that, that pride and excitement of getting behind that animal, you know, getting a website and selling shirts. I don't think I like it enough to buy it, but I don't know. It'd be kind of cool to have an Ogopogo shirt, I suppose. And there's that link. Hopefully that works. In the chat room for those that want to see that. And let me grab that. OgopogoQuest.com. Pretty cool. I wonder if there's somebody searching for that or not. I don't know. It would be kind of cool. Lots of boats. There's a lot of history of boats and stuff in there. So see how that works. And there's your other link there, OgopogoQuest.com. Check it out. And that's your cryptozoology news for this week. And we have some UFO news. I started to mention this. I'm not really going to talk too much about it, but there was another sighting of the Loch Ness Monster itself. It's been in the news. I kind of opted to sidestep that story due to kind of concerns of Photoshop. And I haven't had time to really dig into these photographs. Purportedly, a woman in Bellevue, Ohio, my home state here, discovered some photographs taken by underwater this is a website that takes pictures from the water or underwater, and supposedly there's a picture of the Loch Ness Monster in one of these pictures, but it's just kind of a stick-looking object coming up out of the water, and some people have already said that they've determined it's a fake. I don't know. I haven't had time to really analyze that, but just to mention that story, if you see it out there, the claim that it's really the Loch Ness Monster, and take a little salt with that. But UFO news. Got a little upset about this. I actually did a little rant on Facebook, which I try not to do too much, but it happened. It happened. I got a little upset. Will I know by next week? Well, I should have hopefully a little time to look at these pictures, and maybe some more information will come out about this story. This lady, this out of work woman in Bellevue, Ohio, her photographs basically looks like she screen capped it with her phone. I don't know how reliable that is, but yeah, I'll dig into it. I'll look at it, and yeah, I'll talk about the story next week a little bit more in depth. But UFOs, we don't have talked about this over the last couple of weeks. UFO videos, UFO photographs, UFO stories are huge. There's a lot of these, a lot in the news, a lot in these, especially United Kingdom-based online magazines that basically pay you for all these stories, whether it's legitimate or not. But real actual UFO sightings seem to be subsiding for some strange reason. I'm not sure why. But these videos, they seem to generate a lot of interest. So it's a money-making thing. And while people are, you know, like I said, seeing or at least reporting less UFOs, there is no shortage of these UFO videos on the internet. I mean, there's probably five or six that come out every day. And most of them are CGI. Most of them are very obviously CGI driven. A lot of them are from other countries. And, you know, everyone's making an effort to get, you know, they get their 15 minutes of fame, basically. Yeah, and one recent story, it did get my attention, and I did have a little tirade on Facebook. I got a little upset. It happens. It's just kind of annoying sometimes. But an unidentified UFO witness, so an unidentified person who saw an unidentified flying object, supposedly, was sitting outside with others in a place called Maiden Rock, Wisconsin. Sounds pretty cool. Which lies along the Mississippi River, south of Minneapolis and near the Minnesota border, which is across the river from this Maiden Rock, Wisconsin area, when they saw this UFO. The man captured what he said was a UFO that was invisible to the eye. But when he saw it in a photograph, it appears to be a large UFO looming overhead with bright green lights. Sounds pretty cut and dry, right? So why would I get worked up over a seemingly straightforward UFO sighting? Well, the first clue should come from the report of the UFO, which was reported to the website UFOstalker.com. Not really my biggest source of legitimate UFO information. No offense, but, well, maybe offense. I don't know. The site itself is interesting. But it's just basically reports posted to a website, seemingly just the way they're reported or they're emailed to this this website. So there's no research, no investigation, no interpretation of any of the story or evidence. So there's no vetting of the information that gets put up on the website whatsoever. The report then fills in a little more of my frustration. Even with the first line of the report. Granted, just by looking at the photo, really looking at the photos, what got me fired up is what, no pun intended, well, pun intended with that, what got me fired up with this bonfire when I saw this image. I knew exactly what it was right away. So the report starts with, quote, "I was outside in a field walking back to a bonfire. I noticed how big the fire was and took a few pictures with my iPhone," unquote. So let me, yeah, if you've seen the photo, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't seen the photo, let me see if I can get this to work. I've been very lucky with links lately, so I'm sure that my other things are not going to work, but we'll see. So here's this UFO picture. See if that works in there. So success. We'll wait and see. There it is. So here's the UFO photographing question. So you see all the people sitting in the chair, and you see a bonfire, the smoke going up, and the little flames going up. And oh my gosh, there's this green glowing UFO in the sky. It's coming for them. What are they going to do? They should run, but they don't see it. Nobody saw this UFO when the picture was taken. That's clue number two. So clue number one is taking a photograph of a bright light in the nighttime. That's clue number one. Clue number two, nobody saw this UFO when this photograph was taken. So nobody saw it with their eyes, but a camera saw it. And if you're stumped, well, I'll give you the answer. That's no UFO. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to put this picture in the chat room again, but I'm going to put it in there upside down. Now, what does that look like when it's upside down to you? That's right. It looks like the bonfire, because that's what you're seeing. You're basically seeing the bonfire. Basically, it's, you know, I called it a lens flare, which it's kind of sort of by definition is a lens flare, but it's pretty much a reflection. I don't think that it's hard to say whether or not they intentionally said this. You'd be amazed. A lot of people are fooled by cameras, especially iPhones. iPhones are really, really unreliable. iPhones tout to have these great cameras, but I've seen more things go wrong with iPhones and their cameras than anything else. You know, we think our cell phones are so wonderful that they're flawless and they only see what's there. But they do create a lot of issues, a lot of problems. And this technology reminds me a lot of the 1990s when everybody in the world was getting orbs on their new digital cameras that they had. Well, now we're seeing a lot of other weird reflections and weird lights emanating from usually bright lights like this. So we obviously see this bonfire in the photo, but the photo is just a camera issue. It's not anything anybody saw. Obviously, nobody saw this. So I did not see the object until looking back at the image on the phone the next day, is what this witness said. And that's the most dreaded thing. Whenever I read that, you hear that a lot in ghost photographs where people say, well, I didn't see the ghost, but then the next day I saw this. It's probably because it's a camera glitch or a camera issue. And iPhones have been responsible for more fake ghosts. I don't want to call it fake or hoaxed, but misinterpretation of camera equipment. Cameras are doing funny things on their own nowadays, and sometimes they chop up images that are, especially images that are moving. I have a camera that does that as well on my phone, but I understand how it works, and I've utilized it a lot. I don't call them frauds unless they actually did this. And I don't know. It was really annoying. I got really upset about this. So this signals that either the person really didn't see anything, so this giant UFO was flying through the sky and nobody saw it, and the camera somehow has ways of taking pictures that we don't know, because that must be a very special camera, because cameras don't take pictures of things or images of things that we don't see. They take pictures of things that we do see. We just may see it a little bit of a different way, but it's not going to be something that's invisible to the eye unless it's moving faster than our eyes can see it, which I don't think is the case with this giant thing in the sky. Maybe the person initially realized what they saw wasn't explainable. You know, they saw this image, which more than likely would have popped up in the viewfinder, but most people don't really look at details. He's probably looking at the bonfire in the photograph, trying to get that fire in the frame. So I don't think it was intentional. I don't think he probably even saw this image floating. It probably would have been very hard to see in the dark with a bright light in there. So it probably wasn't even in that viewfinder. So I don't think it was intentional. But I doubt there was anything physically there at all, other than the fire and the people and the chairs, of course. And the image is basically part of an artifact of the camera. The witness clarified things by stating there were 8 other people and no one else saw the UFO. And the last sentence puts things in perspective. And I think the person was genuinely confused with what they saw. And they had really, honestly, truly no clue what the object was, because they probably didn't see it through the viewfinder. And the report ends with, quote, "If it was just something mundane, and if there was something there, why couldn't I see it with my naked eye?" Unquote. So if I didn't see it and I can't explain it, then it must be paranormal, right? I mean, that's what most people think, right? I didn't see it. I don't know what it is. I see it in the picture and I can't immediately explain it. And everyone else on Facebook just gives me a like. Then that means it's definitely a UFO. I mean, yeah, okay, UFO is unidentified flying object. But is there any problem solving going on here? So we didn't see it in the sky, but a camera, again, a camera can only capture what's physically present. Cameras don't have special powers. They can't see, you know, invisible things and make them visible on film or, I guess, digitally. Now, the image of the UFO is glowing green, but the shape of the object, I would think, immediately gave me a clue as to what it was. And again, yes, they didn't see the UFO because it wasn't there. I mean, it was there because it was the bonfire. The bonfire was very bright and created, you know, essentially, I called it a lens flare, but it's more accurately a reflection, probably within the lens cover, with the bright flames coming toward the camera, toward the phone. And it basically made, that's why the image is inverted on that photograph. It's a reflection. I'm sure everyone has encountered a lens flare from the sun at one point in their lives. Generally, it's like a purple or reddish ball or streak of light. You'll see that if you're trying to take a picture and too bright of light, it'll appear on the camera. But sometimes when it's in the dark like this, he might not have seen it. It's pretty faded. And it looks like he probably, he might not have lightened up the image. It might have been done automatically. So who knows? Wow. But I've yet not seen this out in too many UFO reporting websites, but they don't care. They just push this stuff out anyway. They don't care about the accuracy of the report. They just put it out there because they know people are going to click on it and they're going to read it and they're going to get clicks. And so that last story, it's pretty much a rarity. You don't see too much of that going on. But something I see a lot of on news sites that talk about UFO reports, especially lately, there seems to be a trend going on, are these strange fiery objects in the sky. Sometimes you get photographs, sometimes you get videos. And there was a question in the chat room a while ago as to how do you look at or how do you debunk UFO videos, or especially CGI. Well, CGI is, have a good night, Jim. Jim's got to go do his show pretty soon. So Jim Mallard at the Mallard Report. Check him out at tmr247.com. Have a good night. Hopefully I have time to run over there and check out his show. Tonight I'm usually doing a lot of work behind the computer. But CGI stuff is, you see enough of it. If you play around with Photoshop and you play around with some of these things, you pretty much instantly recognize what some of the simplistic tools that people are using. A lot of these videos are using stock footage of other things, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the UFO on the carrier deck. It's not that hard to look up those things and find the original videos for these. And if you can do that, then you pretty much debunk that. And the rest of it's just paying attention to details, paying attention to light, shadows, time of day, distance, speed. There's a lot of things that go into it, but I mean, I could write a book on it. But the video is a little harder than photographs because photographs are dead giveaways. There's a lot of easy things. But CGI stuff, you got to have patience. And you just kind of got to look at it and really analyze it for what it is. And those little sparkly dots you see on all these videos, they're all CGI. Now, I did see some from, there was one video from South America that's legitimately looks like flares. And I tell you, there's one guy that I rely on, Scott Brando from UFO of Interest. He's on Twitter a lot. I follow him on Twitter. He's always busting these things. So he helps me out a lot for when I talk about these stories. Sometimes he annoys me because he beats me to the punch. And I'm like, darn it, he already got it. He already figured it out. But he's brilliant at busting these things. So tip of the hat to him for busting a lot of these things, but or at least bringing them to my attention so I could talk about them as well. Because these kind of videos, these kind of things, it's really annoying. And it does take away from those people that are out there. There are people out there that are seeing things in the sky that they can't figure out what's going on. It's legitimate stuff. They're scared. They're confused. They don't know what's going on. And these videos really detract from the real UFO stories that are going on behind the scenes that we don't get to talk about because we're too busy putting out these fires in the sky. This particular one here was filmed in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And one commenter said, awesome extraterrestrial alien UFO chemical trail. Another person put it into excellent historical context by saying, grand solar minimum, plasma jets increase. Ancients called these dragons. Oh, there'd be dragons in the sky. Well, I don't think they called those dragons. I don't think so. So anyway, Buenos Aires, Argentina. And what was either sunset or sunrise, but watching the video, I'm pretty convinced it's probably sunset due to the light reflection of the fire object getting a little dimmer throughout this 11-minute video. And if you can't figure it out, well, I'll give it away. I'll spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you what's in this video. Basically, what you're watching is a jet flying away from the viewer. And the contrail, not chemtrail, contrail, leaving behind a cloud, leaving a cloud behind it due to condensation. And this cloud is illuminated by the sun because the sun is setting. So it's at that angle that it brightens it up and makes it look orange and red. I mean, it's pretty obvious if you look at, there's other clouds in the sky that are that same color. So why would one be a fiery dragon in the sky and the rest of the clouds are just orange clouds? Is that how it hides itself in plain view? Like, oh, this, I only fly at sunset, so nobody can tell what I am. I don't think so. So no, these are not chemical trails or chemtrails, like many believed, are being sprayed overhead. This is a belief that many people carry, despite not a shred of evidence other than a misunderstanding of basic atmospheric physics and a manipulation of other information to create false information to support this belief. And I know, I just heard it. I heard a whole bunch of people just unplug from the show. I just lost a few thousand listeners over that statement. But, it, you know, if there were some evidence to point in this direction, believe me, I would be talking about it and just reporting the truth no matter where it takes me, because that's what I do here on the Paranormal News Insider. But ghost news, I got to talk about this one. I missed it last week. An unfortunate repeat story from the world of so-called psychics. Unless you add a couple of vertical lines through each S. But I feel like talking about these are necessary. Again, just like talking about these fake UFO videos. I think people that are being preyed on for these scams, this also needs to be talked about. So other people can hopefully avoid this happening to them. Gina Marie Marks, who identifies herself as Natalie Miller, was recently sentenced to 6 years in prison in order to pay over $300,000 in restitution. Marks pleaded guilty to felony theft in February, and the details of her case seem to indicate she's nothing more than a charlatan and a scam artist. The Maryland native Marks promised many people she would either create spells or reverse curses for a price, of course, sometimes at a steep price. Her scam was busted when a 26-year-old Chinese immigrant learned that her boyfriend was married to another woman, and she went to Marks for guidance. Marks promised to create a spell, but instead met the woman several times in shopping centers and ultimately took her for over $80,000 in the form of cash and purchases, including clothes. When the woman realized she was just being led along by Marks, she demanded her money back, but she was also wise enough to call police and hire a private detective. Other people Marks dealt with said she promised to give money back, but never did. One woman was promised her money back once a curse had been broken, but she never did receive her $2,654 payout. Marks would frequently appear on social media dressed in expensive clothing along with jewelry and purses. Eventually, one private investigator hired by one of the people Marks had crossed tracked her down as she was attempting to flee the country via the Miami International Airport. Well, this is a slam dunk case, right? Well, not according to Marks. She feels that she is the victim in all this, of course. Of course, it's everyone else's fault. Marks appeared in court a couple of weeks ago and said, quote, "I'm not a monster. I'm a good person," unquote. In an attempt, I guess, to justify her actions or at least try to play victim to obtain some sympathy, or maybe she's just bat guano crazy, she said, quote, "People are racist from gypsies. They're racist on my culture. We do have power. We're not allowed to talk about it," unquote. Not allowed to talk about it. Well, if she suddenly turns into a frog in prison after giving out the number one secret of gypsies, which is never talk about gypsies' power, followed by the second rule, which is never to tell anyone that gypsies have power, then I might possibly believe her if she does turn into a frog. So somebody does put a spell on her for revealing the big secret. I mean, this is a sad story, and unfortunately, it's just repeated over and over. But I do like to talk about these stories. A clever woman scams people out of hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars. And, you know, I know what you're thinking. You're sitting there thinking, well, how are people so stupid to fall for this? Trust me, these scammers know exactly who to go after and what to say to continue to get money from them like their own personal ATM machine. People this desperate go to a random psychic to get their lover back. I mean, these people will do anything. I mean, probably other than counseling for themselves to get them back. And these scammers know it. I mean, if somebody's coming to them for this kind of advice and this kind of information, trying to get a lover back by going to somebody, a palm reader or a psychic, I mean, they're pretty desperate, right? I mean, this doesn't mean that people are stupid. It just means that they have a moment of weakness where somebody else takes advantage of them. And I speak on this because I know a couple of people personally who did fall for this. And if you know these people, you would have never thought they would have. It just happens. And it's scary stuff. I mean, you trust psychics. You think it's just entertainment. You think you can just take it or leave it. But when somebody goes there and they get information, sometimes it hooks them. And sometimes they want to continue to go back. And sometimes when the psychic says, "Hey, I've got information, but I'm going to need a little bit more money to get the information out," some people will throw that money out there. Take my money. So it's a sad repeating thing that happens. So just kind of keep a little bit of awareness out there. But that's not it. We got one final story to let you go to sleep with tonight. They're back. Or did they ever really go away? One of the biggest stories of 2016 was the mass hysteria following numerous clown sightings. And this story got so out of hand that many media outlets began to not even talk about these stories, give information out, give names out, since they seemed to pop up because of the popularity in the news and social media, with police forces basically saying in many states they were threatened to arrest anyone that was wearing a clown mask in public. Even I started stopped talking about it because it was dominating the news. It was dominating the paranormal news each and every week that fall back in 2016. It just seemed like you couldn't escape it. Pretty much all late summer, all the way through early fall, it was just a story you could not escape. And it just got to be completely out of hand and completely ridiculous. Call it a coincidence, but the sightings this year started with a complaint of a sighting on September 22nd, which happened in the state of Maine. And why would that be a coincidence? Well, Maine is the home of Stephen King, whose book and movie It came out in 2016, with hundreds of clown sightings occurring prior to that release. And suddenly, right after the movie came out, it's just stopped, like somebody turned the water off. But this year, this 2018 sighting was of a man in a clown mask holding an axe while standing on the side of the road. And people called authorities while seeing this person wearing a clown mask on the side of the road holding an axe in their hand. Scary, frightening. Imagine that you're driving down the road, you look over, sitting in a light, and you see a guy standing there with an axe in his hand wearing a clown mask looking in your direction. Now let that image burn into your mind as you drift off into sleep tonight. Or maybe not. And I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.